Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater Podcast for the week of May 16th, 2010.
Yes.
You are Will Hines.
That's correct, and you are John Frusciante.
That's right.
Okay, and good. And we have a special guest.
That's right, Mr. John Gabris.
Yes, hello. I am him.
Yes, hello, John. Thank you for being with us.
No, thanks for having me, John and Will.
Yeah. We grabbed John literally 5 minutes ago, so he has no preparation for this.
This is the benefits of hanging around.
Yeah.
No, I'm not nearly as prepared as these two are.
Yeah, we've been researching for weeks.
That's right.
So let's
a lot of work goes into a team of interns prepare and research for the show.
So what do we do first, John? We talk about shows?
Yeah, that's what we normally do. Okay, is that okay with you?
It's fine with me.
All right. You sound like you're not really all that into it.
I'm having trouble this week, but that's a personal thing. There's no reason to drag the podcast down.
So tonight,
9:30, can we talk about this?
Oh, yeah.
Chris Gethard. I mean, no one can go see this because this podcast is going to go up like 3 hours before it. But Big Lake Screening, which is the Comedy Central TV show starring the UCB's own Chris Gethard,
which
everyone in the community is super excited about.
Yeah, yeah. Gethard, Horatio Sanz, and Chris Parnell.
Well,
yeah.
I don't care about Horatio Sanz and Chris Parnell.
Yeah, okay.
That is not true. Of course, we're excited about everybody.
And I am in episode 3.
Oh, really?
Oh, great.
Episode 3, yeah, as the pizza guy.
Nice. Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you
all
if you
my
had
life.
Yeah.
I think also there's going to be tons of UCB people throughout.
Oh, there's tons of it. Like, yeah. I know, I think Anthony King might be in part of it, and Delaney has a recurring role, Michael Delaney.
Yeah, Billy Merritt has a recurring role.
Oh, nice.
Ben Rogers is in an episode.
And then Owen Burke, former artistic director of the New York Theater, is one of the producers or something.
Yeah.
Sort of like
it's
helping.
Will Ferrell and Adam McKay's company that's producing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Gary Sanchez production.
So this is a Funny or Die / UCB-tastic production, essentially.
And the Big Lake screening tonight is they're screening the first, I think, two or three episodes of the show.
At 9:30 tonight. So it's sold out, but... Mm-hmm. And I bet you there will be a pretty long standby line.
Oh, definitely.
I think it'll – I bet you get in. I'm just going to say it. If you hear this podcast, which will be like 2 hours before the screening.
Get up right now.
Go to the theater. You can see it.
Yeah.
And it should be fun.
Tell Will Hines sent you.
Say, Will Hines, that'll open all the doors.
Yeah. Burn this podcast onto a CD and play it for whoever.
Bring a Discman and play it for everybody.
The Jewish Discman.
Yeah. Hey, what a Discman.
And then tomorrow, the 11 o'clock show is CC&E Improv Factory and the Two-Man Movie.
Yeah.
Two really fun, crazy,
these shows have been
energy.
Awesome. Both those shows are fantastic.
Yeah, those are two of my favorites. I mean, I'm a sucker for a small group improv.
Absolutely.
Totally. Specifically,
the five people in those two shows are five of my favorite improvisers.
So this is Charlie Todd, Chuck Dauble, and Eric Scott at CC&E.
That's right.
It used to be CC&C, but Charlie Sanders had the nerve to move to L.A.,
yeah,
so Eric Scott stepped
really
in.
Really foolish move on his part.
Yep, no way that will help his career.
But lateral move on the factory's part. You know?
Yes, that's right.
not necessarily better or worse than Charlie, but
they
could have went for a big pickup there.
Yeah,
that's true.
There'll be more Bob Seger references. That's the only thing we can guarantee. And the two-man movie is awesome. That's Neil Casey and Anthony Tamminick, who were both in Instant Cinema, and they teach the movie form and are hilarious and weird. Improvise a whole movie, just the two of them.
Just the two of them do a whole movie.
In suits.
Yeah. They clean up good.
Yeah.
What else we got? You got a lot of things circled here.
It's a busy week. Friday is Code Duello, Hamilton and Burr. They're coming back. I know we've talked about them on the podcast before, but it's a great show.
Yeah, Boston guys, they come down here and they do this show.
Yeah, they basically do an improv show, which is a lead up to the duel between Hamilton and Burr.
Right.
It makes it sound like the show is based on this gimmick, but it has. They are just very, very good improvisers.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it should be like a one-time only thing, but they do this like countless times, and it's always great. They're so smart and funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gimmick is just like a thing at this point.
Right.
If they had names like that we knew, we'd be like, oh, I'd see those guys do anything.
Of course.
That's true.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it always ends the same way, but the way that they get there is they just kind of like... They lead the show there towards the end of the show, but the improvising for the rest of it is just this crazy, awesome, high-energy improv.
So we're thrilled to have them back, 7:30 Friday.
Mm-hmm. Then 10:30 is, of course,
the law firm. Right, the new weekend team for the ECB.
Yeah.
The law firm has moved to our 10:30 slot, and we're really stoked. I think this Friday will be our third run, the third show in the run, and it's going very well. We've got sold-out crowds, but you guys can still come down. I recommend you check it out. We are the new weekend faces, so come get to know us.
Yeah, I've heard some great things about the show.
Yeah, it's because we interview people for the deepest shit or the biggest trouble that they've ever been in, so it lends us to get our interviews and our montages off of that are pretty hairy.
Yeah. So what have you had? What are the kinds of things you've had so far?
We had one guy who was an alleged rapist.
Right, right. I heard about that.
Yeah, he ended up being not convicted.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. We all know that guy.
Right, yeah.
There was also, last week was a guy who got arrested with pot in his car, but the cops never found the pot. He was arrested for something else. The whole time he was panicking.
Oh, man.
What was he arrested for?
He had, like, he drove through an Easy Pass, like, 2 years ago with something hanging from his rearview mirror, which is a ticket, and then he got the ticket and never paid it. but the whole time he's thinking, they know about the pot. They know about the pot.
Oh, okay. So he had something hanging from his rearview mirror trying to trick the...
No. He just had, like, because it's illegal to have something in your blind spot in New Jersey.
Oh.
So it was just like, a parking tag that hung, but you can't have that when you're driving.
And
when he went through the Easy Pass, the camera caught it. Like, you know, like, and he got busted for that. And he was like, I'm not paying this ticket. This is BS. And then was arrested, like, 2 years later.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Bullshit.
Yeah. So we've had some good interviews. I mean, you know, the law firm's got, even besides myself, has got a bunch of funny improvisers.
I don't believe there's anybody besides you that's worth seeing.
Well, neither do I, but it should be enough.
It's an amazing cast. The show, you guys have been tearing up Herald Night for a long time, and now, you've overdue, graduated to a weekend spot, so that show should be fantastic.
What's the difference? What's the big difference that you notice between Herald Night and having a weekend show, whether it's the style of performance or audiences or what?
The style of performance, for me, is... like, well, for the law firm specifically, as a team that is pretty much like gut improvisers, not necessarily like form, like masters of the Herald, it's more our domain of just like tag outs going crazy, taking it to crazy places. And as for the audience, it's a completely different audience than Harold Knight. I did not think that. Other weekend performers have said that, and I was like, come on, improv is improv. But Tuesday nights, the Harold Knight audience is students of the art. So they're like soaking it up. They appreciate like a sweet callback or something. Good timing. Whereas the weekend people are just like, make me laugh.
Yeah.
Please, you monkeys.
Yeah.
Have you...
Well, we should talk about it more when we should finish the shows and then actually move into an official John Gaber's talk.
Okay.
Although right after the law from this Friday, John, it's your show at midnight, Blackout Drunk. That's your one-man show.
Yeah, you're doing double duty.
Yeah, I'm going back-to-back. So if you want to kill two Gaber's birds with a stone...
This is a good Friday to do it.
Yeah, I'm doing my one-man show, Blackout Drunk. My guest bartender for now, I guess I could say this on the podcast, is allegedly Neil Casey, assuming he doesn't have to travel this weekend.
Right.
Uh-huh. And what I do is I tell true, terrible, drunken stories from my past while getting... terribly drunk on stage. I think in the past I've done seven beers. It's a 45-minute show. I've done seven beers is the most I've done of just beer. But my first time out, I drank like half a bottle of Jägermeister. And I won't do that anymore. Because I literally blacked out and I don't remember the last 10 minutes of the show.
Wow.
And like the audience was like, you just stopped making sense. Just
not moderating. Oh, man.
The audience would have trouble arguing, though, for being upset, like with the show with that title and the description. It's like, what happened during Blackout Drunk? He got blackout drunk.
Yeah. Well, he literally delivered on his...
no one was demanding their $5
Have you graduated from the shitty beer that you drank the first time?
Yeah,
I
drank Natty Light joke the first time because I was like, now I drink like Bud Light or PBR. Okay. But Natty Light was like, that's what I drank in college. And then I'm like, I'm too old to do this. Like, I like shit foam for like, like destroyed. It is like, it's like a weird show for me to do because I'm getting too old to do. Like, it's coming up this Friday. I'm like, I don't know how drunk I can get this Friday. Because I can accidentally go out and get wasted. But when I'm like, I know I have to drink a lot on Friday.
Right.
I'm like, here we go. Like, it's like
weird choice.
You know?
Yeah.
It becomes work.
Yeah. So do we need to actually go into our little song and break, or can we just segue?
No, I think we can just go right,
Say it just feels weird.
Do the song.
No, not I totally can't.
Boy, Will.
Will just cried. Will made a tear happen so quickly.
We can't publish the podcast this week because this is Will's complete emotional breakdown.
So we're just going to officially move into our John Gaber section now.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about the law firm.
Okay.
The questions you were already just asking. So tell me the history of the law firm. Are you your founding member?
I'm a founding member. Well, it's weird. I'm like a real
You're not, because it was the four-person thing, which was less ambitious. But then when you guys stepped up, why don't you?
You guys started doing school night as a.
Yeah. So there was. So we had originally the law firm was of Lang, Spieler, Pally and Rogers. The four of those guys just got together and started doing improv.
So those four. It's Gavin Spieler, Nate Lang, Ben Rogers, and Adam Pally.
Right. And when we were kind of frustrated with, not frustrated, but like we were all on Harold teams and they were, but like, you know, people were moving, getting promoted to weekends. We were losing a lot of people and mothers seemed to be in their waning days.
Right.
They were losing numbers and it was like, you know.
People moving to LA and stuff.
To LA and we were like, we don't know what's going to happen. But it's like, I performed with Pally on a number of stuff, but more importantly, we were all friends outside of performance in general. We just hung out. We all happen to be like mid-20s native New Yorkers that are all just happen to become friends.
Yeah.
So kind of came through, and we were like, oh, we should start our own. We should start our own team, like a practice group, and and go the Rogue Elephant or Ruben Williams route, and at least just
and respect to Montalban.
Yeah, respect to Montalban, and be like, at least if we don't. Because we weren't loving our current the current Harold Knight situation, only performing twice a month and stuff like that since the anchor team thing was abolished. We're like, well, we'll get a run at like Understate Marks, but let's start practicing.
Right.
So Sue Galloway was one of the people on the team who was now married, but was then engaged to John Lutz.
Right. Had Lutz coach you.
He had Lutz coach us, who, for those of you who are improv nerds like myself, was like a huge deal. It was like enough for us to make 8 non-committed people start committing. So we expanded the team to about eight people, and we started rehearsing with Lutz and then doing school night every Wednesday. We would rehearse 7 to 10 on Wednesdays and then grab a bite to eat and then do school night every Wednesday for like a month. And we're getting really stoked about this.
And so at that point you added Dominic.
Me, Sue Galloway, and Gil.
Okay, right.
Gil Azari. So we were at 8, and we were, like, super stoked, and we're like, this is happening, you know. We could get made into a Harold team. And this is where the history gets shady. Either Gavin brought it up to Anthony, or Anthony brought it up to Gavin. Because apparently, obviously, some people were not excited.
Well, that many players, all, like, very, like, kind of senior players, like, popular players getting together, it's, like, noticed, like, all the rest of the birds, like, perk up on the wire. And, like, what's happening down there? What are these guys all doing?
Yeah, for better or for worse, because, I was...
Attention definitely got paid to it. It was sort of like, what is your plan?
Yeah.
Because the exact same thing happened with Ruben Williams back in the day. Like, they... Although, I think... I mean, I'd have to ask Anthony, but it was the same kind of thing. Big players and a bunch of teams got together and were an indie group called Robin Williams, and then they got formed into a team. And then all of a sudden, they're in Harold Knight, and then on the weekend.
Yeah.
And who knows when in their evolution it was decided, oh, this is more than an indie group. This is something more ambitious. But that was the arc that they traced or whatever. Mm-hmm. So when you guys all formed up, it was like, oh, what is this? Is this really just for fun, or is it?
And then we had to have that conversation because we were like, we were just going to make ourselves a weekend, our weekend team. We were going to make ourselves like Friday nights at Under St. Mark's, just something so that we could play with our friends. And like a lot of people do, but we got really intense about it.
Yeah.
We were very frustrated with two Harolds a month. It got, after I was on two anchor teams back to back for like, where I was performing four times a month, you know, and other people started to feel that vibe. So we were like, let's do this. And then Anthony or someone, we got made into a Harold team, and which was a big coup for us. It was a weird thing because we were like, we're tired of the Harold. But the second we got offered to play together in the Harold, we were like, okay, yeah. Harold team sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the law firm became the minor leagues for weekend teams.
Right, you guys got, like, everybody got plucked from you. Because Gavin was...
Gavin and Pally, like, 3 weeks after we were formed, got moved to Death
Row. Right. I remember that.
To some controversy amongst the group.
Oh,
we
were
like, well, we should have talked about maybe we should stick to our guns.
Yeah.
But then we lost Ben Rogers to Ruben Williams. Then we lost Gil to Ruru. And then the people we replaced him with were Dom and DC, who eventually moved
to LA.
Who moved. But now we're back at 8. With addition of Thomas Middleditch, Craig Rowan, and Fran Gillespie, whose name she got added in earlier.
Fran I think she replaced with Gavin and Adam left.
Yeah, she was one
replaced
of the first
Fran
people.
And DC, I think. No, was it Dom and DC?
No, it was Fran and DC because Dom was already on the team. Right.
Okay, right. Yeah. Okay. That's right.
Yeah, so we've gone through a bunch of, despite, the way we like to say is despite the best efforts of the UCB to take us apart, we still managed to become a weekend.
You fought
well,
through.
Despite having members who are in demand is another way to put it.
That's the thing. The team is kind of a magnet for really...
Big charisma, big...
Yeah, big players, people who are on the cusp of one kind of success or another.
Yeah, and we've been losing people to LA, to jobs, to weekend gigs, and now to...
Yeah.
Now we're not losing people currently, but we are a weekend team, which is pretty funny because when we first reformed, Mother did end up getting dissolved, and that slot opened up, and we're like, oh crap, we consider ourselves like, oh, we're pretty. I mean, there is Bastion, who's great, and at the time, there were other teams that were really.
There's been a backlog, like the weekend slots were locked up for so long with Respecto and Mother. And the stepfathers, and then Ruru and Ruben after Respecto left came in. So like, it was a Harold was backing
long time.
Up with like lots of veteran players, lots of veteran teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a we should have Anthony on and ask him about it. But yeah, it was like the way to solve that. There was no easy way to solve
no,
that.
No, no, no. Right.
There
exactly
was no like heir apparent of this is just the next thing that's going
to
happen.
No, it's yeah just a matter of like waiting for a team to, I think, develop into.
I'm sure there was times in 85 or Fwand were discussed about possibly being
yeah
shepherded into that or forms of that.
Yeah, like Mailer Demon, Fwand, 85, Creep. Those were all teams that
could have been, yeah,
sure.
If the spot was open at the right time when they were peaking,
yeah,
yeah,
any one of those teams. I mean, obviously the Shoves, Dillinger. That was yeah that's a little bit further back, but any
right
one of
right
those
right
teams could have easily slid in and been like a homegrown team rather than like a amalgamation team. Which
yeah
would have been.
It was a weird timing thing. Like if Mother had stopped a year earlier or like later, it would have changed. It would have changed
yeah,
like
exactly
what happened to Harold
yeah
Knight on the weekend. So.
But yeah, I mean, I can't be happier. I'm excited. We found out that we got moved to the weekend on the month of my 5 years on Harold Knight. So it was literally, I did exactly 5 years.
Oh,
wow.
On Harold Knight. It was like weird, April to April. April 05 to April
010. That's great.
Not 2010. I was like, oh, God, my tenure is done. Well, for now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
We could STBBT, shit the bed big time, and be back.
you'd be demoted back to Harold Knight? Yeah.
I could, yeah, not necessarily us as a team, but we could scatter. You never know. I'm not
yeah
against it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather do that than no shows, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. But come on out, and then that won't happen.
yeah, well, so far the show is, like you said, kicking ass.
Right, and Nate Lang, I guess that means he is the grandfather of this team. He's the only guy from the original four.
Yeah, he's the only guy from the original four.
Who's made it through all the permutations, right?
And me, Sue, and Nate are the only people from the original eight.
Yeah.
Yeah,
huh.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yeah.
The only three of us are still around.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's a little improv trivia for you improv nerds out there. Everyone uses the term LaRonde almost as a bit now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, they do a we're going to do a LaRonde. The law firm does a LaRonde in our
oh, you do? Life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
So feel free to come out and check out the literal form.
I'm a big fan of that
a
form.
A punchline form. We're
yeah
doing
is that a
real
punchline form? I had no idea. Do people use that?
I didn't
that
know
as
that
a,
either, but
I
that didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I think people like upperclassmen use it as like a, oh, why don't we do a LaRonde? You know, like
why?
I don't know.
Why that one? Of
why,
all the
yeah,
goofy
why
things that we do.
Disrespecting a legitimately
well,
good
I'm more,
form.
I'm more curious how like all the forms are ridiculous. Why
yeah
should that one be the
true
one that only the Herald is sort of like
yeah
revered
is
because
there,
it has its own night?
Is it seen as like a bullshit form? Is it
because
seen
my mother did it and kicked ass at it for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Didn't, like, the
yeah
sleepover was more or less LaRonde, right?
Yeah, it was LaRonde.
So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Anything where it's like we're all going to pick a character and play with it for a while feels like it's a relative
yeah
of the LaRonde kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird.
I love it. I love it.
No.
I love it, but I love that it's a joke. I can see, like, if you're an under St. Mark's team player, it's like, oh, let's do a LaRonde tonight, but then it's just your montage.
Yeah, you just,
whatever.
Everyone always says
yeah
that.
That's what you mean, right?
Yeah, yeah. People are
team
like,
Brooklyn did that. We said we would do a LaRonde. I don't remember that formalizing into, like, joke status.
So then the joke
but
is
it was
basically
more that we couldn't stick with it. We would try to do a LaRonde for real, and then 10 seconds in, it would be over.
Well, it's more like when you're, like, no one's ever forming an indie LaRonde group. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like, let's be a movie team. Let's be a documentary team. Let's
right,
be
right,
a
right
mono scene team. Let's be a deconstruction team. All
uh-huh
those people always want
to
do that.
I would love to see an indie team take up that challenge then.
Yes,
become
that's
a
next
LaRonde team.
Well, just like Mailer Demon legitimized the invocation as an opening.
Yeah,
like, that was definitely a joke opening. Like, if you before Mailer Demon, if you went to Harold and I was like, do an invocation for an opening, you'd be laughed at. That would be like doing a hotspot for an opening.
Yeah,
really?
Which Ruru did as an invocation as an opening at that time, maybe not laughed at, but nobody
no
did it.
No one was doing it. You learned it once and then it was gone from, no one did it again. And when we started doing it, then
people
all of a sudden,
in Chicago
like,
would be amazed because it was revered in the IO culture. And
yeah
now it's revered here. Because
like four other teams started doing it. It's like the mono scene when Ruru started doing the mono scene.
Yes.
Everyone's like, oh, the mono scene, right. And all of a sudden you see like mono scene groups popping up.
Yeah, Stepbrothers did it for a while and then Ruben does it.
Ruben does it. And then like CC&C's kind of like everyone.
They
like,
actually might have preceded Ruru doing the mono scene.
I believe they
yeah
they did.
Yeah, I think so.
And
yeah
they were doing small group mono scenes. Now like, I mean, Outlook of the Poet, me, Ben Rogers, and Gavin, we do small group. There's like a
yeah
lot of these, like three people that get out there and just chill for 20 minutes.
Mildew definitely brought the invocation back.
Yeah.
You guys did it and kicked ass at it. It was like, oh, it works. And
yeah
then everybody wanted
right
to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys bring the LaRonde back. As the
John, you pissed John
I'm
off.
I'm livid about that.
I haven't seen John this man since you talk about people who wear shorts on. That's literally the most angry you've been.
That's really funny that because I like, I don't know people. I know people think it's a joke form, but no one thinks it's a joke as strongly as you think it's serious. Like, no one's like, no, it is a joke for Sean.
Yeah, good. Good. I don't want to go on too long about it, but it's probably people don't understand it or haven't been properly taught about it, probably been shown what it is, and probably just think it's some, like, fuck-around joke thing.
Well, not, not in front of John Frusciante, man.
No, you will honor that thing.
Jesus. Well, what is, like, what is the true Laurent form? It's like a character wheel of sort, like...
the way that...
It means the circle in French.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And the way that we would do it, because I used to do it a lot.
When you were studying in Paris, improv.
But it's based on a play. Based on a play called Laurent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in the play, you see two characters. You see, like, A character and B character. And then you see a scene with B character and C character. Uh-huh. Then you see a scene with C character and D character, all the way back around to...
So F character, A character.
That's right. Right. Yeah. And so the improv form is similar to that, where you see two characters, A and B, and then you might see either, like, A and C or B and C. Yeah. And you'll see, like, C and B and C, and then C and D, and then D and E. And then if there's eight people in the group, whatever the, you know, the last
there's
person.
There's no way of knowing.
Yeah. There's no way of knowing how many people there are in improv groups.
Yes.
The last character will do a scene with the first character.
Right.
So everyone does two scenes, technically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Most and people back to back except for that.
Right. Know? And then the way that we would do it is we would do that... And then
you mix then up those
do,
characters.
Yeah, then you do a series of scenes with all of those characters. And depending, if you have eight people, you could do one thing of it. Sometimes, you know, if you have three or four people, you could do it twice, so everybody's playing two characters. Yeah. It's a great form.
That's sort of what we do. We do Laurent, but we dirty it up a little bit in that, like, that way we're not relying on, like, only three people can edit the scene at this point, because if you've already been out there, you're like, I can't go out and help out, you know. So we can dirty it up where we can mix up the numbers, but usually we try to get back around to the seeing the first character again, sweep that, and then it's fair game to see these characters in any situation.
Sure.
That's great. It's that's a great show. Yeah. It sounds like it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Come on and check out, see how it works, guys.
Did you answer, I was asking about...
I think I interrupted you.
No. I was asking about the differences in audiences. Oh, one thing I wanted to ask you is, have there been any moments since you've been on, in the 3 weeks you've been on Weekend Teams, where you've made moves or done scenes that you thought were going to kill, and like, you had that realization that's like, oh, we're not on Harold Knight anymore. And...
Yeah, you know what? It's like, it's the shit that, the stuff I used to do on Harold Knight.
You can swear.
That I knew, I kind of, like, you can know would do well. Like, when someone makes, like, a slip up with object work, or not a call out move, but a move where you're like, oh, I got to go over and, you know, like, remember there's a door there, you know, like, stuff like that. That, like, you're doing because you're just a compulsive improv nerd on stage.
Right.
That the improv nerds in the audience are like, give me more. Like, whereas, like, the people who are there for their bachelorette party are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Do Dane Cook again.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you do a lot of Dane Cook impressions, right?
Actually, and on our show, Thomas's character in Laurent was Dane Cook.
Really?
He didn't make the choice. He was just being a douchebag. Someone said, Dane Cook, will you shut up, please?
That's really funny.
Yeah, we have a lot of a lot of people on our team specifically built for not worrying about improv as much as worrying about being funny. Like, we're
the
all
moment,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, we're yeah. sort of like a lot of primal, like, lizard brain improvisers who are just
I feel like that's the two. You need both that in any great improv team.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what was great about Fwand. Was you had both, or any good team. I mean, I think you're downplaying the law firms. Like, an analytical player, and Fran can play analytically. And,
yeah.
And Thomas, of course, can too. Like, everybody's able. I know what you're saying. The inclination is to be hungry for the moment and to do something awesome
Our
now.
Weakness on Harold Knight is now our strength on the weekend.
Yeah.
The
sure.
weakness that we would be like, oh, I don't want to do a second beat. I just want to follow the baker. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Now we can just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, interesting.
But I want to talk about Fwand at some point, because I feel like Fwand had one of the best balances of that, of like, it could just be insane and spiral into craziness. But then you had you and my brother and Dom, who were like the you know, could just like find structure in anything.
Yeah.
I've never played with someone like Kevin Hines and Dominic Dirk. Having those two guys there literally were like was like going into a fist fight with like absolute bad. Like, anything you did, you were like, you could just like close your eyes on stage and wince, and like Dom and Kevin would just come out and be like,
oh, you're the wincer. Why are you always wincing? It's a store.
You'd like open up your eyes and there'd be a scene built around you. I'm sorry, I panicked.
Yeah, they're both amazing justifiers of things. Like, robotic in their ability to...
Yeah, I have a little bit of that in my skill set, but I don't like, not with having those guys, it would just be like, you could like close your eyes and just fall back off. Everything would work out, But and then Fwan had like the other people like Shannon O'Neill's and Ellie Kemper's who are just like out there on. Shannon O'Neill was weird, but she's
fields.
Like a improv genius, but doesn't let you see that. Ever,
on Fwan, right? She was more often the kind of like would play like bring in something crazy, bring in something fun, would energize it.
And Ellie was like all charisma, you know.
Yeah.
Like didn't worry about the structure, like everyone else handled that.
Mm-hmm.
And like then we had types of players that you don't even see anymore, like Sean Hart.
Hart was the X Factor, like hilarious dude.
Absolutely hilarious dude.
Like, would sometimes completely fuck the form in the best on purpose. Yeah. I don't think he ever lost track of anything. He would just walk out and be like, you know, these third beats should be this.
Yeah. So many scenes were like cows analyzing the New York Times. Because Sean Hart is like one of those dudes who's like, he's got the, like, he's an insanely funny dude, but he's got this chip on his shoulder to let everyone know that he is smart. Because everyone's like, he has it in his head that people are like, who the fuck is Sean Hart?
Yeah, when he's like,
And I like a dude in a Gethard kind of way that's like playing like, everyone hates me, too bad.
Yeah,
I'm
what
you.
Evidence has given you that? Everybody is like validating you.
Yeah, yeah.
But you still like choose to be like almost antagonistic. Like, I'm going to win the audience.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And who am I missing from Fond at that point? I said...
Tugulescu.
Tugulescu.
And Gil.
And Gil. Two of the better character improvisers you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, do all that stuff. Obviously, they're all high-skilled players. But,
yeah.
Like, those guys, like, you could, like, Greg is the ultimate pimp. Like, to pimp Greg into anything is the most exciting thing in the world.
Especially Asian ambassadors.
I just about to say, businessmen. If there was a scene where, like, we have a meeting in 2 minutes, someone would always go on Fwan with the Japanese company. You know? Like, every one of our corporations only did business with Asians. Because Greg would just come on and be like, Greg.
Well, he had a note perfect Korean and then Japanese.
He could do Japanese, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese. And I could, when he did them, I'd be like, oh, I see the difference. But in real life, I can't.
Yeah.
He also had like inane skill to speak gibberish in languages. Like, you know, like he can make himself sound like he's speaking fluent Italian, German, even if he's not. He just can do the accent.
Right.
So
he knows the music of the language.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just like, but you said something.
Are we missing Chelsea, of course? Then you had it when Channing with his stepfather, you had Chelsea. The lineup of Fwan was crazy.
Yeah. We've had,
like,
definitely.
There were some really awesome people on that team. And Chelsea is like a little bit of every one of those people. Like, she's like brilliant.
She's one of the best players that we've seen come through.
She's like
brilliant.
And a ridiculous person.
Yeah, and that's another thing. It's like, seems so sweet, but she can like unleash a nightmare every once in a while on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Like, holy crap, what were you thinking?
Yeah, I am seeing that playing with her on Batman. It's like the same thing. Like, she's this very sweet, kind of quiet person, and then we'll just unleash this crazy, fucking filthy nonsense.
One of the best moves I've ever seen Chelsea do was Fwan was doing a Harold, where we used to do sort of themed Harolds, where the theme was whenever a scene was over, you were trying to top that scene, but you would like tag people out and be like, what? It became like a theme. All because I think Kevin kind of tagged me sort of hard in the opening, and I got pissed, and I was like, all right. So then everything was like, when you would sweep, you'd be like, you know, get out of here. And there was a scene where two people were fighting, and a group game, two people were arguing, and they're trying to unscrew a light bulb, and people were tagging them out, like, come on, I could do this. And then Chelsea just walks out all hard and tags out the chair, and moves the chair, and just plays the chair for the rest of the scene, like,
I
did it. I was like, you are insanely smart. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there was, you guys were, like, a really kind of... kind of an experimental. You guys did a lot of experimental stuff, like your opening that was kind of spread out between scenes. Like, you'd do an opening that would morph into a scene, that would morph back into the opening, that would morph into a scene. Where did that stuff come from?
We started working with Chris Gethard, and you know what? I've realized a lot of the stuff I've done at the UCB that ends up exciting me is as a reaction to being bored. Which is like really weird. Like, I was just like, we were so tired of doing
the invocation.
Yeah, we like Mailer Demon had done the invocation for like a year and a half, and we were like, we got it, great. And then when Fwan got formed, we got shaken up when people moved to 1985 and stuff like that, and Fwan was left. We were like, let's do something.
Well, Eric
really
Appel and Matt Moses left, and then Ben moved to 85.
Yeah,
I think right.
And Ellie left. No, Ellie went on to Fwan.
Ellie was in Fwan. Yeah,
yeah. And we were like, let's try something new. It's like, let's do something that's like, I think Two Square was starting to perform at this time. Like, Four Square, but I think it was just...
it was Lutz and Backendall.
Lutz and Backendall at the time. And, like, for those of you who haven't seen that, see that anytime you see that on
the
schedule.
Yeah, three fluid transitions and just, like, they'll
no
be doing
sweeps,
a scene.
No tags, sort of. It's, like, all non...
They just know by looking each other's eyes what scene they're in, and they can just change with, like, a half step to the left.
Yeah, and it's so awesome. We were like, let's try to do that. Let's try to avoid sweeps and use transformative edits and stuff like that, which, as now, people are calling Gethard Harolds Harold's or Shannon O'Neill Harold's.
Right.
Nine people who worked together on that. Right. Now you could take a class in
it. Well, there also was the Sean Hart chip on the shoulder because you guys were seen as the dumb team because, like, Fuan was so crazy that you wouldn't be an 85 – which, like, formed at the same time was, like, the smart team.
Like, on paper, like, they are the smart improvisers. You guys are the gut weirdo improvisers. You know, like,
so you guys were doing the more ambitious form, though, where you had to actually keep track. I don't think 85 could have – well, Tanoi's going to be mad at me when he hears this.
I mean,
it would have been a lot harder for 85 than people would have assumed to do that, at least.
Yeah, and you know what? We didn't – the thing is, we didn't do it amazingly either. We just did it first.
Right.
Or, like, not first. People have been doing calendar, but we brought it to Harold Knight for the first time in a while.
Right.
That's true, and we weren't doing it amazingly. Like,
no, at first you did it badly. Yeah, I think it was you stumbled because you had done this great invocation for a while.
We did it poorly for a long time.
Yeah, I think it was – I think I was expecting you guys to give up on it. It wasn't even bad. It was just sort of stumbly compared to where you'd been.
Which is hard to do, you know, when you're like, F, I got to do a fucking better show than
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the transformative edits and stuff covered for a lot of – you know, when you – dress up all the accoutrements, the scenes don't have to be as good, and history will be kinder to it. We still had great scenes, but, like, we would have a show and be like, it felt amazing. You know, you ever do a Harold where it's like, if the last group game, if the group games and the third beats are good, you could be
they
like,
forget that the second beats
right,
are nothing.
Retroactively awesome.
Yeah. So with Fond, it's like, our whole show is like, if the skeleton is great, who cares how the actual scene, like, we would remember it, be like, oh, that was awesome. The one where all our second beats were in a mono scene at a baseball stadium.
People
are like, yeah, that was a great show. It's like, wasn't great scenes though. It was just great enough, like, you know, it was just something different.
Yeah.
Not to knock it. It was still like the most fun.
That is definitely something that happens in any long form improv show.
Like,
the structure can dominate the content, the ending can dominate your perception of the whole thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I remember specifically Gethard being like, Gethard classically likes to rile up his, I'm sure, whatever new
rivalries.
Team he's coaching now is like, the new team says you guys are a bunch of pussies. He was like, 85 says you guys aren't smart. And then
that's true. We were such laid back. I can't imagine Porter Mason. Porter Mason being like, fucking Fuan. Like, we were probably just like debating over which article in the New Yorker to talk about.
Yeah.
We weren't even worrying about.
Yeah, it was a really funny situation where Gethard was trying to rile us up. It's like, he was like, they don't think you're that smart. Not even just 85, just saying like people in general, which was like, and that was enough to get us going.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, fuck them. Fuck
it
them.
Probably was true. That was the perception, but the idea that people were like talking about it a lot was probably not true.
Yeah.
Like,
It's also like Kevin and Ellie are Ivy League grads. Dominic Dirkus has Asperger's. Like, he's he's like a beautiful mind.
Let's talk about I want to talk about Nate Lang a little bit. I think he's like one of the funniest dudes to ever come through here.
I think.
And like, some of my favorite scenes on Harold Knight have been law firm scenes with Nate Lang. Do you remember the one where Fran was the girl who was scared? She was scared of something. She wouldn't say what it was, like a boogeyman or like the stepdad
something.
Something
was in the closet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was it DC was the wife or something? I forget who the wife was. Fran was the kid, and Nate was the stepdad. And she gets into bed, and I think Gil ran around and turned the lights down so that, like, the lights actually got dark on stage to symbolize going to sleep. And then the door just opens in the hallway, and Nate was just sitting in there, like, punching his fist into his hand or something. And he's staring at Fran. Or I forget actually what he was doing. But the audience just, like, exploded. He didn't say a word.
Yeah,
the audience
that's
exploded
slang.
With laughter. He glowered the whole time. Fran was just, like, shivering in the bed.
I don't think it was even at a way where Fran couldn't see.
Yeah, she
Lang
had no
either.
Idea
yeah,
what
so
was
she
happening.
She didn't know what it was. She was just playing it cool, like something funny is happening, and Lang was just behind her. And like, in the least, like in the most surprising way ever, like, this is the boogeyman, is a guy who's gonna jump you. Like,
he wasn't probably his fist. Yeah. I remember he just like had his elbow. He was like leaning forward on his knees and just was like looking at her,
well,
and it
he
was so creepy looking.
Yeah,
there's no one I know who gets more mileage out of silence than Nate Lang.
Yeah,
yeah.
Much to the pain in the assness of some of his fellow performers, because like, he just sits there and you're like, make it say something, and you're like, no, this is your style. But I'm like, help for guys like me. I'm like, I'll talk if you don't say anything. I'll talk the whole scene.
Yeah,
I'll
just keep talking over it.
Like a husk of a scene. You know?
Yeah.
But with Lang will just sit down and relax and be like, listen, Marcus, my wife.
Yeah.
A real pain in the ass.
Right.
For those of you who don't know, Nate Lang is just like a dude who, he doesn't do it, like, and I hate to say it because it makes it sound so corny, but he doesn't perform the way anyone else performs.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, if he auditioned for Harold Deems now,
he would never make it. He ignores notes the most graciously I've ever seen anybody. Yeah. I coached a lot from very, very briefly, and I remember giving Nate, and Nate is like, I love Nate, he's a sweet guy. Yeah. I'd say notes to him, he'd nod his head, and I'd be like, no way is he going to do what I just said. There's no way he's even going to try. And that might not be what his internal experience is, but it certainly would look like
that. There's few people who could, like, he knows game. There's few people who could avoid game that hard and still manage to have funny scenes. Like,
yeah.
I consider myself a funny person. I have to fucking, like, my brain is flying when I'm on stage.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, God, I got to make a game move. I got to make a move. Lang is just like, what comes to my mind? He doesn't even need a scene partner. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like,
yeah.
He can just
Lang's
do
the
it.
Guy, Lang's the guy where you could just be like, go out there and you got 25 minutes, make this show work. And he will.
Wasn't there some law firm scene, too, where, like, there was like sharks involved, and Nate challenged the shark to a fight, and he jumps into the tank to fight the shark. But the way he did it was like when his character made the decision that he was gonna to fight this shark. I forget, this was the second beat of something. I don't remember how we even got there, but like he like stood facing the audience and like kind of like started jogging in place, and then he did some weird like squat hard to the right, stood up, squat hard to the left, and then turned and jumped into the invisible shark tank. Like it is, as if he'd had some routine of how he had to prepare himself to fight this shark. But and like when he lunged like up in the air and to the left, it was awesomely hilarious and super committed and funny.
Oh, dude, he is so – I know.
It was really great.
He's obsessed with wolves. All things Native American.
Really?
His scenes always make a reference to like, I was riding Palomino in the Mojave Desert and I came upon a shaman. You know, it's like
– His specifics are – I remember he was dying of – his character was dying of some disease on Beverly Hills, his old Harold team.
Uh-huh.
And I think he gave himself non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Very serious disease. I shouldn't even bring it a lighthearted way, but – I was like, nobody says non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That is the best specific.
Super specific.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes I've ever been in was in an early law firm rehearsal when we had just been made a Harold team. We were doing the exercise where you get a suggestion and then you and your scene partner both come up with an initiation and you say them both and then you kind of sort out the scene. And mine was, I said to Lang, we got to go back to Vietnam. We have tons of buddies back there. We were special forces. He goes... He's like, God, I just love washing my German Shepherd. Somehow the suggestion where they both made sense. And the whole scene was me saying, we have to get the special forces. And he was like, I can't do anything to my German Shepherd. Really watched. The stakes of it were so funny. It was just so random.
That's great.
He was just shampooing a German Shepherd for like 5 minutes. And I have a kind of bad breaking problem, but Lang can shed. Lang and Mike Still is a guy I don't perform with that often, but when I do, both of those guys can make. And Lang, I've been performing with now for like 2.5 straight years.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still has the ability to break me because
they're both super strong committers.
Yeah,
both like,
you know what? That's what it is, and that's like a skill I don't have as much as those guys.
Right. Like, yeah, me neither. Yeah, I have that problem too. Yeah. I can't break constantly.
Oh God, I break. It's the worst.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Lang could say anything. He doesn't like. I honestly sometimes we get off stage and I'm like, I don't even know if you enjoyed yourself, but he does. But he just doesn't ever let
it show.
He's
a great actor.
Yeah,
he's a really great performer and a great actor. Watching him on Maud Night, he was on Maud Night for a while.
Yeah.
And he was great on Maud Night.
He's like Rogers in that way where it's like you're like, oh shit, you're also a really good actor.
Yeah.
Right.
And like and it's not a skill set like I don't personally have. So when I see it I'm like, what the
Yeah.
How do I do that?
Yeah, teach me the
Yeah. What was your first Harold team?
Havana Clam Bake.
That's right.
April 05 to I think on the calendar out there it says like April 05 to like July 05. No, every other team, like, there was, like, every other team got the mandatory 6 months.
Right.
And then a couple years ago, teams started getting 9 months to a year to try to develop. In Havana, they were like, let's take this thing behind the bar and shoot it in that. The team was absolutely cancerous.
It was like you, Goots was on that team, yeah. Adam Pally.
Good people. Justin Tyler from Sidecar. Carl Arnheider.
Pam Murphy was on
that team. Michael Somerville. And,
Carl Arnheider, we said. Oh, I'm going to forget somebody.
Susanna Beckett.
Now
in L.A.
Yeah.
Absolute cancer.
Was it a rough experience? Or
talked to all my friends who've had their, everyone's first Harold Deem experience is either amazingly beautiful or terrible.
Right.
Right, right.
Mine is more, even with comparing it to people, mine was more terrible than everyone else's.
Was it the kind of thing where everybody could just feel that it wasn't working?
It wasn't working, and then we would have a bad show, and then everyone would just turn on each other afterwards.
Yeah.
So it was like artistically bad and then like socially bad.
Right.
Some teams are like, hey, they had a great show, but they all fucking hated each other, or you know.
Or the shows are bad, but they're night. They're getting
along.
The
shows are bad, but it's like, hey, let's go get a beer or something like that.
Yeah.
Our team like hated each other. There was like I feel like anytime there were 7 of the 8 people there was talks of kicking that 8th person off. No matter who it was, like, we need to figure something out. Yeah, it was bad.
Oh boy.
Then you went right there to Mailer Demon then?
When Havana got broken up. And some people got cut from there. Me and your brother and I, Kevin Hines and I, got
put added to Mailer Demon.
Yeah, because 2 people got lost from Mailer Demon. And Mailer Demon was an awesome experience working with those guys.
Yeah.
Like, we would do 17-minute heralds sometimes that were just like, you know, like.
It was the best. Yeah. I mean, I went to see a couple of those early shows because it was Kevin, got added. And
he had been off Harold Knight for a couple of, like a year or two.
That's
at that point, right?
He'd been on Filth, and Filth was broken up, and he was like just out in the wilderness, Harold Knight wise. So yeah, you and he got added, and I don't think people knew who you were yet, and I don't think Kevin had been appreciated yet.
I did 5 shows.
Yeah. So 5th with the Mailer Demon. Yeah. And I think like it was Shelley Stover and Dave Thunder who were removed from Mailer Demon.
Yeah.
Who were like big players, like big presence, big charisma.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, replace these 2 people that everybody knows with Kevin Hines, who was not appreciated at that time, and this new guy, John Gabris. And it was like, well, this team, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
But then, like, right away, I can attest, the very first show, I mean, the first group game was about a bunch of neighbors concerned over the magazines getting delivered properly to all the – and, like, all the neighbors came down to the cul-de-sac and were, like, fussing at the magazines in the mailboxes. Such a stupid idea, and it was – hilarious. And we're being like, that looks like a pretty good first group game for a new configuration.
Yeah.
And then the next show was even better. And then you guys locked in very early, as I remember, to like very fun, high energy, awesome show. And Matt Moses came into his own.
Yeah, Matt Moses became like, we harnessed his weirdness.
Yeah.
And which law firm is now doing again is harnessing Moses' weirdness.
Yeah. Super weird that
yeah,
guy.
The rise of Mailer Demon was unexpected and really great. And it was like a thrill. It was really fun to like watch happen.
Those shows were... like for me it was just like excitement. It was like I was like, you have to do something. If you don't, if you
there
blink,
was a while you weren't in scenes. You went through you were only group games. I remember Gabris would wait to the first group game, then you'd be out.
Yeah, and then I had to be like help do second beats and stuff. But like it was partially being like I was learning that I was pretty good at like understanding game, and I could be like, oh, I could play like this weird kind of style. But at the same time, it was also like if I breathed in between scenes, someone would be out there. Eric Capel was in the second scene every single time.
Yeah.
Like Spo would always be in the first scene. Like these people were like animalistic improvisers.
Yeah.
This whole team were like, we could rip through a Harold in 17 minutes and be like, that was great. We should do more. Like, and there was a period of time where we were anchor teams on Harold Night. We were doing every other Friday at Under St. Mark's with Tantrum.
Right.
And we were rehearsing on Sundays for 3 hours, and then we were on a cage match run for like 11 weeks.
Yeah.
So there was a period of time where we were together like 12, 13 hours a week of just pure performance, not even counting the hanging out.
Yeah.
Where we just got like, everything just started coming together where
It was great to watch. I was jealous of it and impressed by it. Like, and I was glad that Kevin got to have a good team and all you guys. It was just really fun. I mean, you can't predict chemistry like that. Sometimes stuff just clicks.
Those were very different people on that team.
Oh, never would have said if you'd not seen you guys together, oh, this combination of people is going to be a
great
hero. Yeah. And that's not disrespectful to anybody on
there. No, it's just, like you said, you can't predict. You could put people together who you think like, oh, these people are all going to be awesome and get along and this is going to be a great team.
And you could
team.
Even be like, oh, he's sort of a game guy. He's sort of a character guy.
Right.
We could figure it out.
Like, but then when you put those people in, when you put those configurations together, people's strong suits come out, or you know, different aspects of things come out in people, or it's like, oh wait a minute, this is not working at all.
Yeah,
you know,
it can go one or the other way.
Yeah,
Mailer Demon just happened to. That was a pretty. That was a really fun team to be on. We would do shows where the game of the scene might be like just listing Italian foods. Like, we would have shows like that, but few and far between did we have a show that wasn't funny. Like, it was always very funny with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Appel, like, Eric Appel is now, like, going to be a huge comedy director.
Yeah.
Working out Funny or Die in L.A.
Right.
Yeah.
That dude is just pure funny. And, like, Ellie Kemper's from The Office, pure funny and charisma.
One syllable, the whole room falls in love with Ellie Kemper.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
She would charm everybody.
It's like, sort of, like, Shannon has, like, the same one word, and people aren't as charmed, but intrigued. Like,
Neil
has that power. She could step out and be like, someone's going to get him a foot. And you're like, and the audience is like, I want to know more about this person. Moses is probably the best second-line improviser.
Yeah, that got to be said around that time, and I didn't notice it before, but it is true. You initiate something to Matt Moses, and his response is weird and unpredictable and super fun.
You could initiate an entire premise and it's gone in the
disregarded
second
and destroyed and replaced like with I can't remember. There was one like for somebody initiated him. We saw what you did on the security cameras. And this doesn't make any sense. His response was outrage in tone, but what he said was thank you or something. He was like, yeah, I thank you for that. I was like, what's happening? Why are you both outraged and glad? And just completely. I think it might have been Ellie who initiated. She was just like looking, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah. It was. He has had some amazing ones. One that comes to mind was like one time I was like his dad. I'm like, hey, Jimmy, tomorrow it's gonna be a big day. I hope you're not nervous. He's like, my feet are so hot. And he's taking off his shoes, and I was like, wow, game over, man. The audience is like, yay, move, Gabe Bruce. We want to watch him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Mailman was a fun team.
It's funny because law firm still carries a lot of that spirit. I think is because Moses is there and you're there, and it's different people, but it does have that same sort of like. Snowball rolling down the mountain.
Yeah, that very kind of frenetic, like people who, like you said, kind of lizard brain, like out just for fun, you know, like, and who can bait each other into having fun and know each other well enough to bring that kind of spirit out of each other.
Yeah, we're kind of like, we're very close to either having amazing shows or terrible shows at any given moment. You know, like, we're either like, this is going to go nightmare bad or amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
We're just kind of like running through. One thing, like, to toot our own horns at the law firm, one thing I like to say about the law firm is it's one of the, like, it's a team where any one of the eight people can do, like, you could be like, the other seven people are stuck in a subway. You got to do the show by yourself. And I think most of the eight of us could be like,
oh yeah.
I could do an hour solid.
I'd see one person Sue Galloway show, no problem.
That perfect example is Galloway. Galloway is a loose can. I could watch Galloway read a phone book for 2 hours.
Oh,
about,
man.
All her different voices.
She is hilarious.
On 85, it was the best to, like, watch her, like, paired up with anybody.
Yeah.
Preferably the most un-Galloway-like players were the best to see with
like
Sue.
Porter and Sue.
Oh, just put, like, yeah. Porter would sit down and say something. I mean, I don't mean to put Porter in a box either, but I will. To say something sort of just, you know, Porter would sit down and say something kind of reasonable premise from the opening with like a good well-rounded character, and then
Sue would like growl a pun back at him.
To be like something interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
one person Sue Galloway show would be great. You're right. Any of you would be great.
Like,
one person
like,
Thomas Middleditch.
Yeah,
show.
Middle, a Middleditch show. I would watch surveillance footage of Middleditch like, looking for his car in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Like all those people are just like they're all like really funny like.
Yeah,
And we somehow managed. Like, it's one of those cases where this eight-person team could easily be a nightmare of egos trying to out improv each other, and it almost is. But we managed to make a good.
Well,
show
yeah.
Out.
I mean, here's the thing: you said like the shows could either be a nightmare or a huge success, but like never do you ever seem to look like you're worrying about it. Like
no,
the team
we're almost okay with a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
We're like, oh, the nightmare would be good.
Yeah, the team it has this energy of feeling like not only okay about whatever happens, but like enthused, excited about whatever happens. There's a very exciting energy that pours out from the team.
Yeah, enjoying the moment in a good way.
Yeah, you got people like Fisher, and
Fisher. Yeah. Jesus, another one.
Yeah,
Fisher's another guy who's just like funny on tap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, very good improviser too. But a guy who you could be like,
you could definitely just
like,
let
sir,
it set him
sir,
off.
Sir, you were about to do your 6-minute lecture on photons. You know,
well, that definitely would not throw him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that you know what? And there's sort of like it's a whether it's deserved or not. We all have this cockiness where it's like we're each being like, give me 5 minutes alone.
Yeah,
pimp me into something. I want to do it.
Yeah.
We're all like that kind of attitude where it's helping. It's helping us now as we're developing, but it may end up being like the dark side of the forest.
Could be.
Well, any great team has a bad side. Like any team that has enough elements to combine together to be something interesting, they can combine in a destructive way. Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it makes them interesting. I think it's funny that given like how tumultuous the lineup has been, like let's make a team. Two people are gone. And how about this though? They go to LA. How about this? Oh Jesus!
Yeah.
That as soon as you do get moved to the weekend, the show Law and Order gets canceled.
Yeah, that was the thing we said the second we were like, we finally get the.
You name yourself off one of the most established institutions of television, and you destroyed it by naming a show after.
They're immediately being like, okay, well, Law & Order is canceled. We're like, well, we changed our show name was Law & Disorder.
Yeah.
And we're like, here we go. And now the reference is like dead immediately.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome.
Because it wasn't Law & Disorder originally.
It was People's Court originally, right. But then we realized that that had no...
Oh, the People's Court, we need to name ourselves after a current show, which is now no longer
defunct. Now People's Court is still airing.
Right.
That's not, that's really funny. I forgot about that. We were like... Like, oh, this doesn't bode well.
Do you have anything else?
I think that's good.
Yeah, I think so, too. Anything else you wanted to say?
No, guys. Come out and check out the law firm.
So the law firm, 10:30 is on Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great team, great show. Something definitely worth seeing. I'm sure everyone who's listened to this podcast already knows. But go check them out on the weekend.
Yeah.
Go see them in their new clothes.
That's a good way of putting it.
We bought all new outfits.
Oh, wow. Good.
Fran went shopping for all of us.
I can see that.
Yeah, we're really stoked.
Like ordering you to wear specific things.
Yeah, I'm not going to wear shorts,
Johnny. You know what? It's fine. You've earned it.
Just stop disrespecting the LeBron. That's all the law firm is about.
Come see us try not to disrespect the LeBron. That's going to be our new pitch to the improv nerds.
That's a great pitch. Okay, so that's it. Right?
We should wrap up the whole show, maybe, you think? Or are we done with the whole show, or are we going to go into a new segment?
I think that's the whole show, right?
Yes. Good.
We've done enough.
Oh, yeah, we've done a long time.
Yeah.
Sorry if I ate up another segment.
No, it's exactly good. What we wanted.
I can talk ad nauseum about it.
Yeah, us too.
I find myself in classes when I'm teaching being like, and a guy who's really good at that, you know what? You don't know what to say. It's just 101. Oh, you know who's really good at being truthful? You know what? Never mind.
Years ago.
I'm going to text Will.
Yeah. UCBtheater.com, UCBcomedy.com.
New episode next week of the podcast. Thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Gabrus.
No, thank you, guys. This has been fun.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Thank you, John.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.